I am Margarida Lobão and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week I ask my guests to choose 8 tracks, book and luxury they want to take with them if they are cast away to the desert island. And for right reasons, the music is shorter than the original podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening. My castaway this week is a researcher, traveler, musical lover, comedian, Ian Robin Marsh. He is most known for his research based on his PhD on quality aspects of internet telephony in 2009. But before that, he did a bachelor degree in 87 in physics and computer science and a master degree in computer science in Manchester. An Aquarian, born in 65, Ian Marsh, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you for having me.
I already introduced you like a researcher, music lover, travel, and probably plenty of people don't know that you have mixed blood. I know your father is Italian, your mother is Indian. What was the influence of your upbringing in your life?
Yeah, so the influences were good food, local community. I come from a small town in the north of England. Friendly, wholesome, working class community.
Mm-hmm. What are your first memories?
That's a good question. I'm going to say that a lot of times because you probably have a lot of good questions. I think playing with my friends, playing with a dog. I'm an only child. I don't know if you're going to come back to that, but I'm an only child. So happy memories in the garden, playing with a dog, being with the parents, meeting friends. Trying to make friends as being an only child as well, which works really well. So just for a little bit of information for our guests, I grew up in a small town on the Yorkshire-Lancashire border called Barnoldswick. It's 10,000 people. And I don't know, am I preempting your questions?
No.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's the longest word in English without the words being repeated, without the letters being repeated. And yeah, it's a town which is quite well known in the UK because they make Silent Night beds, quite a famous bed brand, and they also make Rolls-Royce plane engines. Mm-hmm. So for a town of 10,000 people, it's, at least for the things that came from it, it's quite well known.
All right. What family means to you?
I'm trying not to say that's a good question each time. Family means everything. We're a small family. I'm married to a Portuguese lady. And
I'm sorry, I'm just back in your early days yet.
So we're a small family. We're a small family, and I know people have larger families. So a small unit, I would say, relatively tight unit. But it's important, very important. It's even more important now than it was then.
Mm. So, since you didn't actually develop this issue, but we know that your father left some years ago. What was the impact of that in your life?
Oh my God, if I say that's a good question all the time. At the time, it was a little bit of a relief, to be honest, because there was a little bit of friction between my father and my mother, mostly due to a little bit of drinking, but no violence or things like this, but alcohol, I think, had an effect on his life. Indeed, the people around me. I lost one of my closest friends due to drinking. So it's very hard to say in words. I remember one incident in particular where my parents were arguing and my eyes were not focusing. They were going in different directions, kind of like on strings or something. And my mother picking me up and taking me to the doctor, rushing me to the doctor. And I was thinking, wow, this is having quite a lot more effect than I noticed. I think I grew up to be a man there to kind of, quotes and quotes, look after the mother. I didn't look after her in a way, but I felt I should be responsible. Years later, I had a couple of problems. A psychologist said that might be related to that time. It's maybe make you into a man, maybe make you insecure, maybe make you a bit angry. Frankly, I don't know. I've not read about what are the effects. It wasn't devastating, but it was strange.
You still maintain contact with him?
I don't.
You regret it?
I will. And I think, whenever I think about homelessness, So something on the homeless, or there's some charity called Shelter. I do think of him, yeah. Yeah.
What aspects you're talking about that actually happened in your life that you think could be related to that part?
I have absolutely no idea. And I really want to say that's another good question. That's so boring for the listeners. I don't know. Maybe a little bit independent. Maybe being a little bit mother's boy. Being very close to the mother. We were a bit closer, perhaps. I feel a bit sorry for my father. We would go together and I would learn to drive with her and everything. Maybe make you a bit resilient. Maybe make you a bit angry without even knowing, you know. I don't know. The psychology, I'm repeating myself. I don't know, if I'm honest.
What did the psychologist tell you that?
That you learn to compartmentalize things better. If you you push it out of your head, and that generally, growing up in that time, you didn't go to a psychologist. We're talking many years later that I went to a psychologist. I could understand that the compartmentalized part, I think many people, they just push it out of the brain, becomes something you sort of learn. But I'm guessing, I don't know.
Were you a peaceful boy during this time?
Yeah, I guess I was relatively peaceful, one of the crowds. I was the only one of mixed heritage around me.
Yeah.
And I've reconnected to the people back in Bonalswick, and it's very important. I've reconnected to at least one friend called Russell Kitson. He's very close to me. We grew up together, and he sends me crazy messages every day. Very heartwarming. Mm.
So your school days, you consider yourself pacifical?
Do I consider myself what?
A pacifist, so a peaceful person?
Yeah, I think so. No. I don't think I was... No, I mean, we play football, we play...
I can see some burns in your leg. Do you want to say about that?
Yeah, the usual... I didn't see you could see under the table in this interview. Yeah, we were mischievous. We were playing with a fire. Somebody threw some fire, some petrol on the fire. Not on me. I was not trying to set me a fire at Tiananmen Square, and it splashed and went on my trousers. And that day I remember vividly, and it splashed and the trousers were burning. We were laughing, and then we realised we couldn't get it off, and my friends put it out, and they had a huge blister. It's, I don't know, for the listeners, 30 centimetres long. And I remember coming home, sitting in the chair, I was so scared to tell my mother. I was so scared. And I lifted up my trousers and said, "Mom, I burned my leg." And next minute I was out of the door. Wow, almost by the scruff of a neck. It was like picking up a kitten. I was gone. That was the second time now. But I probably make my mother sound like quite an aggressive person, but not yeah. But I was in that doctor pretty quickly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, boyish things. We would build dens, you know, we'd build little houses out of packing crates and things like this. We were okay. I think we were a little bit playful. I mean, Russell is still playful, and my friends are still playful now. We didn't cause anybody distress, but we did little boys things, you know.
Yeah, so you think you have a happy childhood?
Yeah, definitely until that 14, 15 period. Yeah.
Until your father left.
Yeah, I mean, even post it to some degree, I think was pretty happy. Some good friends. I was integrated. I never had any problems with not being English or, you know, Indian or whatever. So I look back at those days in Bonalswick with great fondness. Definitely. The community was great. I love the people. And they had a reunion a couple of years ago, which I didn't go to, and I regret that. But yeah, I do. Yeah. Nice, honest work in Northern Town. Yeah.
Absolutely. How difficult it was for you to choose these 8 songs?
Impossible. I think... You might have seen me just before the recording. I was procrastinating. I was nervous. I was doubtful. I was...
Why is that?
I would love to do justice to 100 songs. Never mind 8. Arduous, difficult. You name the words. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Should we listen to your first song?
I'd love to. Happening here today, a show of strength with your boys' brigade.
So this was your first track. Can you tell us a little bit about it, the song you chose and why you selected?
Yeah, for the listeners, that was Going Underground by Paul Weller, or by The Jam. Due to the people around me in the school, they all love The Jam. They all love Paul Weller, and I still do. Without doubt, Paul Weller has been the greatest influence for me musically. He's still going. I love the man to bits. Bit hard to say that.
We're emotional as a father, my goodness.
I can't say it like that. It's just it's a difficult comparison to make that. But yeah, I mean, music's important. You mentioned it in your introduction. That song is like, you know, we were all into The Jam. I learned to pass my driving test, and a few of us, myself, Gary Slinger, a couple of people, we even went to Leeds twice. We even lost the car, so I learned to drive to go and see The Jam. And we put the car in a multi-story car park, and we came out. We couldn't find it because we're on the wrong level. So this, I've done so much to see and enjoy Paul Weller and his subsequent bands. That song started it all. It's angry. At that age, we were angry mods. We were not fighting, but he made us feel like men. And one thing at the end of that song, he said, you'll see kidney machines replaced by rockets and guns. That's still true now in Ukraine and Russia. Instead of getting health services, countries are buying missiles. And that seems wrong to me. And what Paul Weller sang is what we all felt. He's a genius. There's no other words for it to describe him for me.
Thank you. Going back to your family and your younger years, I know your mother remarried. How was it for you?
Yes, so Raymond, yes, my mother remarried. It wasn't a big gap between the two, so Raymond Dinsdale came into our lives. I'm looking at a photo now at our wedding, actually, right in front of me. Mm. And as a father, a stepfather, I consider him a father. It was great. It was really great to have a father teach me technical drawing, tell me things about Rolls-Royce. Yeah, it's not your blood, but to see my mother happy and to have the three of us. The Jam are a three-piece and the family's a three-piece. Me and my wife are a three-piece. It's me, my wife and the cat. So yes, it's happy, they're very happily married and together for many years. And that was nice to see my mother happy, and I was happy as well. Ray has always treated me very well. He's very well known by the people of Barnoldswick because he was some kind of big wig in Rolls-Royce. Well, he's a big wig, he's retired now. But yes.
But did you have to move, for example, from home where you were from somewhere else?
I'm sorry.
From Barnoldswick to somewhere else?
Okay. Yeah, so people often say, where do you come from? And I say the north, the south and the Midlands to some degree. Yeah, because of work, and Rolls-Royce is located in Derby, then we moved to Nottingham. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because
What
has impacted in your life? In friends, school, in future? What you thought in that time?
By that time, I'd already started university. So I was studying in Manchester, and it wasn't that big. I mean, if I went home, it would be just, when you're a student and you're eating fish and chips and onion bhajis, going home was going for nice food. So the move was relatively inconsequential. On the other hand, the move to the university was incredible. I don't know if we're going to talk about that, but...
Yeah.
Okay, so not significant.
Yeah. But you enjoyed the movement, the moving. You think has it have an impact on you? Was it the friends from the school or?
No, not really. That's kind of an interest. I never thought about that. I don't think so. I think my life was Manchester or going home, and home rather than being born Oswick was Nottingham. Yeah, not especially. I don't think so.
No.
I've never really thought about it, to be honest, but I don't think so.
No, but do you think that the fact you moved, that actually stop the connection with your father, or I don't know where he is, or something like that?
No, I don't think so. I just saw it like a new beginning, or a new beginning. I don't think it's that. I didn't feel anything then, apart from having a new house and getting a slightly different bedroom. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I know that you had a grandmother that passed away last year, with 99 years old. What was the influence of her in your life?
Oh, enormous, and it grew towards the end, which is kind of strange. It was a slow start, you know, where the grandmothers look after you, or the grandparents. And year after year, I appreciated her more and more. And my wife is from Portugal, and she... the family is extremely important. I mean, it isn't everywhere, right? But she reinforced the idea of family to me, and having a grandmother. She's a particular person, quite strong-willed, quite funny, quite different, you know, old school, literally old school. And yeah, that was a disaster. There's a song dedicated to her later.
How is your life without her?
That's it's a little bit empty. As I said in the beginning, we're a small family, and of course, losing one, you know, there were people in my life, and my wife, the grandmother, my mother. We have a little cat as well. She's really cute. And of course, Ray as well. Sorry, Ray. That's four women and one man, you know, if you're listening to this. But we used to have phone calls every Sunday, and we went to Canada many times. It was a joy. We'd go and do the Canadian thing, but seeing the grandmother was very special. I know she's very special for me, and I think I was very special for her as well. I think so. That sounds very arrogant. People listen to this and say, oh my God, how can you say that? But she always says she loved me, and we went there for the 40th, we went there for the 90th, and my wife came with me, and she had a little bit of money saved up. She was very good with money, and she left half of it to me, which is now in my savings account. But it's not that. She is very special. I miss her every day, yeah.
That's important. Should we listen to your second song?
Please.
Thank you so much. Can you ask me why you choose this song?
Again, I thought as the presenter you're supposed to say what the song was on by him. That's okay. It's okay.
I was expecting you to present it, sorry.
No, I will do, don't we? Yeah, of course, that's Ceremony by New Order. It's also recorded by Joy Division. New Order, Joy Division, massive influence. Listen to all the songs, listen to all the albums, go and see them live. Again, my wife and I went to see them relatively recent in Portugal. I used to go to every single concert in Manchester if you could get tickets, because they are from there. They're famously on the Hacienda, or the Fracture Records are on the Hacienda. And I talked about going to university in Manchester. At that time, it was the place to be. So choosing a university, I probably wouldn't have gone into Oxford or Cambridge. I didn't try. Close enough to home and to be in that music capital. There was so much great music. You still see Manchester tribute nights. You still see those things now. And I think it's fair to say at that time, Manchester was the music capital of the world.
Very good. It's why
I have the Hacienda in your bedroom. It is why I have the Hacienda in my bedroom. You're correct. And I mean, Bernard Sumner, Peter Hook, I mean, they're not speaking, but New Order, I just think all the songs, I mean, people, of course, know Blue Monday, a song which is like clockwork, all these different gears working together. But whenever we'd go out in Manchester, which is fantastic times, not only to the Hacienda, we all had our favourite songs. My friend used to play Bon Jovi, Paul Batherham, if you're ever listening to this. Another friend used to play History Burns by the Railway Children. And unfortunately, we lost him last year. And I used to play Ceremony. That was the song I wanted to hear before I went out. And it still sounds great to me now.
Thank you so much. We talked about your family. Now I would like to ask you if you can tell us a little bit about your work. I know you're a researcher, but an advisor too. What do you like the most?
Research is trying to do new things and publish new papers. I was looking at this very recently. I have about 20 papers and 20 students. I like the student part. I'm more proud of the students than I am of the research. The research is something you do quite often in a group, but you know, you write a paper and things like this, but the other is people. And I looked actually where the students are. It's a bit frightening that one of them is even working in Eurocontrol, which controls all the planes across Europe. I said, oh my God. And the students are all over the place. I have one Chinese student, a very sweet girl. She came to my PhD thesis. And a little funny story, perhaps, for the listeners. Feng Yi, she's called Feng Yi. She's very sweet. I hope she can hear this. But I asked her, Feng Yi, what did you learn from working with me? Maybe nothing. Maybe all the English are very annoying. No English or anything. And she said, I learned. As a Chinese, I used to keep trying things different ways. I said, did you learn, you know, maybe just a thing and try one? And she said, yeah, I did. I learned to do it once and do it correctly. And I said, just out of interest, what are you doing now? She said, I work in a bank. I said, So I think the bank owed me quite a lot of money, because if she'd continually tried to transfer €1 million and said, oh, that's not working, let's try again, then the bank would have been in pretty poor shape. So I had a little laugh to myself about that little thing. But yes, I'm proud of my students. And I can just say, just as a, by the way, I will meet one of my students on Monday from 8 years ago. He's coming to visit. I'm very proud of them. I hope they're listening to this.
What makes you get up in the morning?
I think kind of work. This research work, this technical work, it has no end. This is both a good and a bad thing. I get up and I cycle, shower to work, or take out the laptop and work on the problems. I mean, probably people have this idea of people, you know, bubbling test tubes or doing experiments. It's not quite like that in my field. It's a lot of computer work. But to get up and, look at the problems we're trying to sometimes solve difficult problems. Sometimes we're trying to do easy problems. Sometimes we're trying to get money. But I feel very fortunate to work with a job that I like. I know many people do not. I think it's 25% of the people like the work, you know. So that's, for me, a privilege and a joy.
I didn't say to our listeners, but you are working in a company called Rise in Sweden. But I know you worked in other places, in other countries, not always like a researcher. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
You mean the non-professional parts of my life?
Or even the professional parts before I actually arrived to Sweden.
Yeah, maybe I should just... Work ethic is quite important. I have to really, I think, thank my mother for that. I have worked on a paper round, which was really weird in some points, but it's really nice. Nobody ever got the right paper they ordered. For some reason, I couldn't seem to get it. The people at the end of the paper round never got the paper, never got the right one. So they might have been a left wing and they got the right wing newspaper. They might have been a right wing and I got it, and they apologised. And I used to apologise, and I could never understand how that happened. So I've worked as a paper round. I've worked in a fish and chip shop. I've worked in a cheese factory. I've worked in a steak restaurant. I've worked behind a bar. I've worked at Marks and Spencer's. Can you imagine? Funny story, my wife loves Marks and Spencer's, and I used to work there. And I think this gave me a little sense of perspective that, you have to work for a living. Money is important. You mentioned the grandmothers. Money is important for them. It's not about saving and being a millionaire, that you appreciate the value of money. So if I wanted something, to buy a car or buy a computer or a guitar or probably some Paul Weller memorabilia, I worked for it. And that I feel is important. I have a very strong respect for money. I don't want to be a millionaire, but you work for things. Maybe that's a northern upbringing. Maybe that's the way it went. Maybe I wanted financial independence. Professionally, you're right. I've worked in a few different places in a few different countries. We might come on to travelling, but I've worked in Sweden now for many years. I've worked in Germany. I've worked in Hong Kong. I've worked in Australia. And I've worked in Japan. In Japan, yeah. A bit of teaching English and a little bit of professional work as well. Yeah, being a technical person means your job is relatively portable, thankfully. But the value of work and how to work is, I think that's kind of universal. Paul Weller, by the way, he works very hard and he says, new groups that release albums every 6 years are not doing the job. And I agree with him. If you're not working, in my case, teaching students, doing research, getting money, then you're not doing your job. I don't have a lot of time for lazies, to be honest.
You think you need to change places to places?
Do I need to change? Probably as you get older, it gets a bit harder, you slow down. In the early days, yes. I think it was quite nice. It was quite invigorating to go somewhere new, learn new people, new skills, new manners. As I got older, I've sort of maybe stuck a little bit in Sweden. I might regret that. Sweden's a wonderful country. Don't get me wrong. After 27 years, it's been very good to me. It's a great place to work. I like the social system. You pay your taxes. You look after people. But yeah, change is good. I have one little expression there, about when people leave the company or people leave the country, I usually say, it's better to leave than to be left behind. Because I slightly envy them. You can always leave yourself. No one's stopping me. I'm not in jail. But I'm happy that they're going on to new things. It's an interesting question. I don't know. I have to think about that a bit more with a drink. Am I allowed to drink on air?
Yeah, surely.
Oh, wow. I like this podcast studio.
What are your future projects?
Technically.
Yeah, in your workplace, yeah.
In my workplace or anything that gives
you money.
Yeah. Can I tell a silly story?
Surely.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I hope this is not becoming a comedy podcast, music radio podcast. So as a researcher, we like money. And our company or a research organization didn't have a slogan. And they're like Nokia connecting people or, whatever.
Like, just do it.
Exactly, yeah. Many companies, it's a bit less now. Google do no evil, I think. But many companies, and they have a slogan. And we said, we don't have a slogan. And I said, we'll do anything for money. And the guy said, well, it's true, but we can't say that because it sounds like, the oldest profession in town. And he said, yeah, I know. I said, no, there's a difference. We're even worse. We'll do anything for money. But you asked me about future projects, yeah. So thank you for asking about that, because I think I've been a little bit ahead of the curve of my organisation, of my people. I worked on the internet when nobody else was using it. Can you imagine people didn't believe it, didn't believe in it? I've done other things. I'm now working with autonomous vehicles, which is a little bit frightening. I hope nobody sits in a car that I've been designing. I'm not designing it, and we're gathering data for autonomous vehicles. But I'm glad you asked me that, actually, because I feel as a researcher in a very high-tech country, we should be ahead of the curve. Might not be anything, it might be something, but it should be new and innovative. So my current project is helping software for self-driving vehicles. Don't step in front of it if I've done it. I'm not a very good driver, so probably this is a shortcut to go from bicycle to autonomous vehicle, just sit there and drink in the back. But let's see. I don't know the next project, but let's see.
Let's listen to our third track. Do you like to introduce it?
May I?
Yes, please.
That would be lovely. So just before you push, before you put the record on, it's Paul Weller, of course. I mean, Paul Weller is... I've chosen him a few times, and for the people who maybe don't know Paul Weller, thank you. We've had that one. It's that one. It's called The Paris Match, and this was Paul Weller's second band. He was in a band called The Style Council, so he decided that the Jam were angry and you were rebellious and you would tear down houses at a town called Malice and things like this. And then he left, and I remember crying. I remember the day he announced it on the TV and someone told me Paul Weller has left the Jam. I couldn't believe it. I was actually speechless. I was in Barnhall Street Cricket Club and someone told me, Martin Foltz. I remember his name. I remember where I was. I was next to the... Sorry for this. I was next to the fruit machine. He told me. I said, you're joking. So I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God. I hold on to the... It's like, you know, like a death or something. And then he formed a new band called The Style Council, and they were so happy, so playful to see Paul Weller happy with all his collaborations. And I think during the Style Council, I fell in love with the Jam. I was an angry young man, copying him. I was looking at pictures, you know, with copying the clothes, going to buy the clothes. The Style Council were very happy. He was happy. Paul Weller was happy. He was happy with a woman called DC Lee. So this is, I'm sorry for the long intro, but I need to get it out after all these years. It's a song called The Paris Match.
Lovely song. This changed it the way you actually see the world. Do you have actually a girlfriend in that time that actually made you feel special then?
I wouldn't relate this to any kind of relationship, but you know, you've sort of clouded my mind. You walk from cafe to bar and wonder where you are. From Paul Weller and from the Jam, you know, I think the Jam fans would flip in their graves if they went all soft and lovey-dovey. That song actually was sung by Tracy Thorn. I probably didn't mean to choose that version because there's a version where Paul Weller sings. Tracy Thorn from Everything But the Girl, you probably know her, but I didn't answer your question. I think, in simplicity, I grew up with Paul Weller, I fell in love with the Style Council. I think not all the songs are romantic, but the Jam could never have written that song. And I thought they were cool. I think they were very Euro. I mean, the Style Council, it's got a very French feel, right? It's a French jazzy feel that was unthinkable for the Jam as well. So he introduced me to Europe to some degree. I mean, we may come back to travelling. I don't know if we're going to talk about travels. I thought he was just cool, sitting in French cafes with dark glasses and long macs. And if you look at the cover, it's a picture taken in Paris. It's just... Yeah, it's great. How can that man make two different types of music? I don't know, because he's genius.
Did you introduce this song to any girls in that time?
Oh, you're very curious. I don't think so. I just used to just say how great it was. I definitely had a lot of posters of Paul Weller in his different phases on my wall. Did I introduce any girls? No, I don't particularly remember. This was a personal thing. But maybe we danced a slow song at the end of a club, at the end of a night. The music was not for the people, really. It was for me, I think. I mean, I would like people to like it, but I didn't know. It made you feel in love, or you could enjoy it, or you could listen to lyrics. All of the songs, I think, that we listen to, or that I listen to, that everybody listens to, touches you, and you choose the songs because they touch you. And at that time, maybe it made me a bit softer, I don't know. But I just couldn't believe the fantastic lyrics. And they were always printed on the inside cover. I used to read them religiously. I recently bought a book called Weller. It's a beautiful 600-page book. It's like an encyclopedia of all the songs and lyrics in it. I don't know. This podcast isn't about Paul Weller, but if anybody wants to go and enjoy the music, you won't be wasting your time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for advice. We were talking about your research work, but you become famous by your PhD and postdoc. What can you tell us about it for our listeners?
I don't think I'm famous, but
you are here in podcast, so you have to be famous for something.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, is it famous? I mean, you could say one thing about my PhD thesis. It's about voice over IP, internet. You know, you speak of the voice, which is now omnipresent. At those days, we had telephones. Probably people remember a telephone, right? But when you call somebody over WhatsApp or you know, Skype or Teams, you're actually using the internet for your voice. I can't say I contributed to that field. Teams like Microsoft and Zoom and WhatsApp. But we were kind of using that technology. I mean, we thought that would happen. I thought that would happen. And someone once said to me, the quality of the voice is much more important. You know, so people will pay for business calls and things like this. No, you want to hear the voice of your grandmother, if she's okay, or your wife, or your husband, or your kids. Even now, you can hear poor quality, or, you know, perhaps people are travelling, or it's cutting out. So since we are humans, and maybe we're not all living together, we're disconnected, as interesting as it seems, I wish I could have more influence in this field, but having good quality voice communication is essential. It was a premonition. I never thought it would be like this, but I didn't invent it. I thought it's interesting. And if you need any problems, we're happy to do any contracts. Remember, I'm a researcher. We'll do anything for money.
How was it, the PhD? Tell a little bit to our listeners how long it would take, how difficult it was. It was something you always wanted?
I'm glad you asked me that. And I actually was not prepared to answer that. So, yes, I moved to Sweden. And one of the reasons to go to Sweden and to live there was to pursue a PhD. Yeah, I'm a little bit tenacious when I start something. A PhD in Sweden takes typically 5 years, in industry took 6 years. For me, it took 8 years. It was definitely difficult up to a certain point. It was quite easy, but there were points which were very difficult. Yeah, some of the darker moments, I think, where I thought it was not going to finish. And I had health-related issues. I managed to get these shingles, and a few other things happened at that time. Unfortunately, somebody passed away in front of me. And that basically caused a one-year depression, I would say, probably. My wife was very helpful. I would come to Portugal and sit in the bath. I still like to sit in the bath, strangely enough, and relax. But all in all, the PhD was good, but it was tough. I can't say. And that was one of the darkest moments of my life, was thinking you're going to the country, you've invested 8 years of your life, and you might not finish. It was partly due to the stress. It was partly due to some incident that happened during the way, and you know. So, but it was good to have it finished. It was very good, like having this weight off your shoulders. And my parents came, and my wife came, and it's good to have it. It's tough. I mean, if you're going to do a PhD, think about it. You've got to do it. You've got to have a good advisor and all things like this. And my advisor was good. But yeah, it was tough. No question. Someone says, you know, rite of passage, are you glad you did it? And you say, yes. You say, would you send your kids through it? I say, not so sure. You know, when you come out of the tunnel, everything is better, right? But it was tough, but I learned a lot. I learned a lot about myself, and I learned a lot from the education. I still use some of the things that we learn now. But yeah, I wouldn't ever say I'm a doctor in Germany, like, doctor, I don't care about this. Even the PhD is not that important to me. It was a personal crusade.
Something you always wanted?
I think so. I think where I grew up, people did apprenticeships. There's some very, very good engineers. And I mentioned Rolls-Royce. I mean, when you go on a plane, you can go and thank all those guys in Barnoldswick and Nottingham. And yeah, so when you look out and you see that plane going around, thank those guys. But it was not common to go to university. I think I was one of a few people that went. And yeah, I mean, university and things like this, despite all of the hedonistic days, to have a good education is, yeah, it is something I always wanted. And I'm, with a little bit of tinge of sad, not tinge of, you know, tough, it was, I'm glad I did it, yeah.
I'm glad you did it as well.
Thank you.
What are you going to play next?
We're going to play another time from Manchester time. So this is a Manchester band, they're called the Railway Children. The song is called Brighter. And yeah, it reminds me, we used to play them, and I'm going to tell you a little funny story about them. So it's a local Manchester band on the Factory label. It reminds me of my happiest times, I would say. I have a couple of very, very, very happy times. I hope I can mention a couple. And I remember New Year's Eve, this song coming on, and thinking, wow, that was, it didn't matter if you were drunk or you met someone, or you're just with your friends, and this song came on. But just before you hear it, I will tell you after the song. Let's hear the beautiful song and not me talking.
To listen to your story.
I think you don't like it because you reduced the vocal, the sound on it. Yeah.
It's for commercial purpose, like, you know.
Oh, that's fine. So two stories related to them, actually. So we love them and we all used to play them. I think I mentioned, well, we used to play these songs. One of my flatmates used to play another of their songs. That's my favourite song. Does silky, silky vocals. When you see the man, he stood there, grey eyes, he looks fantastic, he's tall. And those beautiful guitars. And we went to see them, we had a few drinks in advance, and every single song that they played, we said, that's rubbish, play Brighter. The song you just heard is called Brighter. So we were all at the front, had the T-shirt on, and they play a song, and they go, that's rubbish, play Brighter. And at the end... It says, this is for you at the front. And he played Brighter. And we all went, that's rubbish.
Brilliant.
I feel sorry for them. But it was so funny. And I still remember it. They actually played a concert in Berlin a couple of years ago. And they were chit-chatting. And so they before, and they were around. You know, they're very nice people. They're all from near Manchester. And I said to one guy, have you seen the Railway Children before? And the guy said, yeah, a few times. I said, so when? He says, I'm the bass player. And I said, I'm sorry, that's a lead singer's fault. I can't stop looking at him. He's so beautiful. No, I'm sorry for that. Anyway, I went to Berlin to see them from Stockholm. It was worth it. Such a nostalgia. He said to me, he said, you were singing all the lyrics. I said, hopefully not too loud. Yeah, anyway, probably a band people don't know on this podcast. Check them out if you like indie jangly pop. Yeah, it's important for me, especially that New Year's Eve when they played it at 12 o'clock in the Hacienda. Imagine.
Absolutely.
Yeah, fond memories.
When I was preparing this interview, I realized you have a blog, ianmarsh.org. And the first thing that appears is a quote, all that glitters is not gold. Do you like to comment on that?
I do, in a way. I thought of a few things. You know, pressure makes diamonds. All that glitters is not gold probably comes from Ian Prowse, a Liverpudlian musician. I don't know if he was the first one to say it, but he inspired me to put it there, and that's in one of his songs. And, you know, be aware of fakes, basically. I think I consider myself to be integral, probably very annoying and never shut up. But I think honesty, integrity, I think is important, and I thought that would be an appropriate tagline for a blog, if anybody techies out there. I had another idea called contender. You can just call thanks, quite a nice word. So yeah, be honest. Anything that's shiny.
Be careful about it.
Could be shiny and nice, could be shiny and I won't use this word on national podcasts, probably be edited out.
Continue with your blog, you can see immediately two obvious things, tech and non-tech. Since we already talked about the tech part, I would like to ask you if you're talking about the non-tech. The places, your songs, the oral history, the cooking, the golf, you name it. So what is more important for you?
Traveling.
Can you elaborate a little bit more?
I thought I'd give a short answer for a change. Yeah, I mean, like everybody has some hobbies. I mean, golf is just maybe something to do if you get a bit older. Cooking, we all like to eat. I like to make a few dishes, inspired by my grandmother. Every Friday afternoon, she would come home and all the whole street, all the northern white street, would be smell of Indian food. I think everybody wanted a chapati or paratha or biryani. Yeah, I mean, I would say tech is nice. I quite like it, but I quite like the other activities. Quite like sports for relaxation, swimming. I don't know really what else to say, really, but...
You prefer traveling? Why? Do you like the most people, places?
Traveling is must. I think it severely... severely sounds like a negative word. It highly influenced my life. My mother and father were together. We went away every single year. So some of my fondest memories going away from 4 years old to, well... Every year we went. I can name the countries like a rhyme. Majorca, Bulgaria, Spain, Italy, Greece, Yugoslavia. Imagine Yugoslavia, doesn't exist. I can name them all the places I've been to. And going to Bulgaria in 1970 was perhaps very different, you know. So things were very interesting there, usually to the seaside. I was looking at some old pictures, lots of pictures by the seaside and things. So travelling has... arguably had the largest influence on my life. I mean, tech is interesting, meeting the people you love and getting married and things like this, and meeting people. I mean, indeed, meeting my wife was highly connected to travelling.
We'll go for that.
Are we going to speak about that later?
Yeah, later, yeah.
Oh, interesting. I'll try to keep it short. but, yeah, I think when we went...
Travel or music, if you have to choose.
Don't make me make that choice. Shooting or poison. I'm not going to make that choice. That's inseparable. What about both? What about having music in the plane?
In the plane, surely.
But I'd like to say one thing, perhaps, and that is, I love England, and as I've gone back more with my wife, I've enjoyed it more. I see it differently. You know, I see those beautiful castles and crumpets, and guest houses, and you know, green rolling hills. I know you take it for granted if you come from the UK, especially rural. But going to Spain and seeing flamenco at 4 years old blew my mind. It still blows my mind. This flamenco dancer, these red lips, this noise, this dress. I was at the front. I couldn't believe it. I think it was like someone that punched you 20 times, but instead of with boxing gloves, it was with like passion. No one dances flamenco in Northern England. It was amazing. And everybody was still out at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock, you're in bed. And in Spain, they were going out. So this is great. It's warm. There's the beach. There's flamenco. It blew my mind.
You think travel made you the person you are, changed your personality? What is this impact?
Oof. Now I'm going, oof, instead of saying that's a good question. I guess there's some interplay there. I mean, you're open to new cultures, you see new cultures, but you're still kind of the person you are, you know. Try to be a bit fun. Well, you don't try to be funny. You're funny or you're not, right? Tenacious. I see things a bit wider now when I see it through different eyes or different nationalities. I wouldn't like to see the world completely through nationalistic eyes, but it's a joy. I've managed to visit many countries, particularly outside Europe, is really very different. I don't know if it's changed me. I think I would say it's enhanced me, I would say.
Could you open new horizons? Thought you could be more narrow-minded, and it actually helps you a little bit in different perspectives?
Yeah, I don't know if I would consider my... I mean, I was open to anything, really, in a way. I mean, you know, I don't know. I just think it... Yeah, I don't... Sorry to interrupt you. I think the world's out there, and it just makes you even more fascinated, even more curious, even very short distances in your own country. It's a fantastic escape. I mean, during COVID times, we're at home, you know, and just to see different cultures, to hear different language, try different foods, follow the Lonely Planet, it's wonderful. I remember one quote, I think it was Michael Palin. He went around the world in 80 days, and he was on the boat, a dhow with some Indian guys, and he got off the boat. You know, he went around the world without flying, as you know, like the Phileas Fogg in Around the World in 80 Days. And he got off the boat, and he just said, "It's impossible to think that I'll never see these people again." I thought it was very touching. And that's... I do like the people. I love the sights. You can't see the sights. My wife won't come make me show you the sights, but I do love the people. And I remember one thing after doing a round the world trip, we both, myself, Mike Goulden, and Graham Hibbert, I hope you're listening, or you will listen someday. We went for a 1 year round the world trip, Egypt, India, Nepal, China, Hong Kong, Thailand, Malaysia, Singapore, you know, Australia, all the rest. I mean, round the world tickets. I mean, that probably might sound quite glamorous to some people, but it was very common to go backpacking for a year. We went for 3 years. I was enjoying it so much. And then we arrived back home in the UK, and I noticed the £5 had changed. So obviously the currency changes. Sometimes it goes plastic and smaller. And this was really hard when the plane... Someone said, when you land, you land harder than the plane, you know. I was looking forward to going home and seeing everyone and things like this. And anyway, sorry. So I noticed the £5 changed because I had, whatever it was, dollars or whatever, Singapore dollars, I don't know. And I said, just, by the way, oh, the £5 changed. And the lady said, where have you been? They've been changed for 3 years. I said, well, to be honest, I've been to Egypt, India. Yeah, travel, go do it. What's the worst thing is the longest journey you go is to the travel agent, but now it's the hardest journey you do now is to the sky scanner and book.
Should we listen to your fifth song? Can I introduce it?
I can. It's back to Paul Weller. It's, yeah, maybe related to a little bit to the negative times. And, it's back to a little bit to negative signs. But this is when Paul Weller became a solo artist. So post-Jam, post-Style Council, then he went solo. I think he had some great songs in the early days. He definitely had some songs. And this is a song called Broken Stones.
On a beach, kicked around this place.
Tell our listeners why you chose this song.
Indiga Fatabopo. Yeah, it was during the darker times, we discussed it, and his songs, he had a couple of songs, and it just touched the spot. I remember listening to it in Portugal with my wife and playing it, and perhaps now in happy times it doesn't have the impact, but then it literally, I think it says it hit the peaks, you know, a little piece gets shattered. The lyrics, his songs touch everybody. I think many people probably know "You Do Something to Me." But in the negative times, in the darker times, a year perhaps, I wouldn't play it. I could almost play it post or with somebody else. But I think I mentioned going underground, summarized it, exactly encapsulate how I felt. Paris Match, you heard a little bit earlier. Lovely and happy, and this was a negative time, I can't say, during the PhD struggles, I can't deny that. It completely hit the spot. It's like he was singing to you personally.
Lovely.
A bit difficult to say that without choking up.
Mm-hmm. That is just the biggest time. I think that was just your part time, that one.
If a song helped me get past...
I'm just asking if you just consider one... Bad time, right? In the time of your PhD, do you consider other moments that were tough for you?
Yeah, there's been a couple. But that song reminds me of that time. I chose the songs which remind me of the time. And that song is synonymous with that time. Yeah, I don't maybe talk about some of the other moments. I don't know. But that reminded me of depression and just being at a low point in your life, but he sang what you felt, and that was
sure.
It. Yeah.
But if you have to consider more low times, what do you consider?
The lowest. I don't know. I think it's been a couple, but yeah, losing a grandmother was pretty tough. Seeing my wife in the hospital in intensive care, that was pretty tough. That's tough. Thankfully for the cat. Perhaps leaving the father. I don't know. I just compartmentalise that. Maybe that comes back later, you know. I don't know. I mean, my life's been pretty good. I'm pretty happy. But there's been a couple. The playlist is a little... I feel it's a little bit melancholic in a way, but perhaps they're the poignant times you remember more. But it was hard to choose them. I could have chosen 8 deliriously happy songs. Had it been my wife, she would have chosen Mr. Brightside 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
But you're probably not here to listen to her. I can say that she has her own podcast, by the way.
Mm. I'm sure she does.
Yeah.
One thing that we didn't mention, but I know that you are very proud of, is your ability to write some scratches and being a comedian. Can you comment on that?
I haven't written many sketches, but I have had some funny moments, yeah. If you talk to my friends in Barnoldswick or perhaps in Manchester, maybe less in Sweden, I'm sorry, Sweden, there are some funny people there. I don't write sketches. Yeah, okay, I mean, with my good friend Iyad Al-Khatib, you're right, actually, I forgot about that. We wrote lots of stuff, but we never really did anything. We have so many funny stories, so many anecdotes. But perhaps the listeners are a little bit curious, you know. So ad-libbing, just saying things very quickly. I remember once when we were living in London, when we were from post Manchester, went to London to work and save up money for the round the world trip. We went to a comedy club because it was the cheapest place to go. And there was a man, there was a lady comedian. She was very funny. She had these big red lips and white teeth. And she was abusing everybody, especially the men. You know, she was saying, you know, you got a small penis and you lost weight and where's your hair? I don't remember the jokes, but I remember that all the men were really afraid of her. She was like a feminist comedian, but she was funny. And this is just one story for our listeners. Perhaps people have heard it before, I don't know. This man next to me got up and he whispered in my ear, said, I'm going to try to go to the bathroom, I'm bursting. You know, I said, okay, good luck, what do you want me to do? You know, give you the bottle or something? And the guy went, he shimmied, in English, shimmied. He went around the wall with his back to the wall, you know, like hoping he wouldn't see. Of course he saw immediately, but to walk all the way around the comedy club, what's it called now? The comedy club, I think it's comedy store, the comedy store in London. To walk all the way around, you know, a live gig around the wall, hoping no one see you, you know, everyone was moving the chairs and everything. And she saw him for a moment and she watched him all the way with the eyes and I could see she was building up for a joke. But I don't even remember thinking, and the guy, he got on the stage behind this comedian. Can you imagine trying to go to the bathroom? Of course, the bathroom was on the other side from where we were sitting. I don't know why he whispered to me, I need to go to the bathroom. It was like, I'm escaping from a German concentration camp, help me out, what can I do? Anyway, so this guy, she immediately went all around the wall and he got on the stage behind her, like what the hell? Everyone was watching him. And she opened her mouth. I don't know what she was going to say. And I just shouted, it's just a stage he's going through. Everyone was laughing. They were laughing so much. And she scowled at me with this horrible face. And she said, you bleep, 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 bleep. That was funnier than what I was going to say. So, yeah, I mean, me and my wife, sometimes we watch it a little bit. Improv shows, you know, Would I Lie to You and things like this. For people in the UK who know, this show is a panel show about people telling lies and it's mostly a comedy show. Yeah, we like to share funny moments, like to do crazy things. I think in the latest few years, my biggest confidant is Eyal Al-Khatib from Lebanon. He gives me a very good Arabic twist on everything. And me and him, I say one thing which is completely different to what he says, but we enjoy the differences. So I say something completely unexpected and he says something completely unexpected and we love the difference. Most people say, what are you talking about? I say, you know, the difference would normally cause, not conflict, but say, I don't understand you. For me and him, we only laugh at the differences. It's a beautiful thing. I hope he's listening to this because I think he knows what I'm talking about.
What inspires you?
What inspires me? Whew. Well, that was a little bit of a gear change. Great people. Great, funny, inspirational, knowledgeable people. That's definitely a big inspiration. Music. Travel. Mea litro. Yeah, sorry, I just said that at the interview, half a litre of beer. No, it's not that important. I think people. Friendly, interesting, exciting people. If it's with a little bit of cerveja, I'm saying cerveja because my wife is from Portugal. So if it's with a little bit of beer or for wine for my wife or cocktail, that's nice, but it's great people, yeah.
Do you have any plans to publish it?
No, that's it's stuck in Google Docs somewhere.
Why don't they put it in your blog?
People will steal it, they're good ideas.
So you actually are proud of it?
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, they're half-finished ideas, you know. I think there is a gem, there's a genesis, there's a seedling of ideas there. We have little characters, you know, we thought about doing the office, the university, you know, recording it one day. We've talked about it, but it never really happened. But I think the ideas are genuine. I think the ideas are new. I think it's funny. And me saying this without giving any evidence is a bit silly, but I won't fill up the podcast by talking about them. Watch this space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, for stopping this, we're actually going to the sixth song that I would like you to introduce it, if you don't mind, and tell me why you chose it.
Yeah, again, perhaps I'm an oldie and I keep choosing these songs from the formative years. It's a band called The Wooden Tops. They London-based band, and they made one of the most complete albums that I know called Giant It's got songs about travelling. It's got songs. It's about, you know, last times and love affair with David. It's got a great. It's a great band. They have this very hypnotic. Not this song, but they have this hypnotic drumming and bass. I went to see them recently. It's fantastic. They're still playing live now, and still, if you have a chance to listen to them, I would highly recommend you listen to this album, Giant. This song is a little bit more sad. It's called Last Time. You know, hold me please, this hold me last time. So again, I feel my playlist is a little bit melancholic, but it's a very important song.
Thank you so much for one wonderful songs.
Do you like it?
I do like it, yeah. That's very nice.
I'm happy to hear that.
It's lovely. So, continuing our interview. I understand you are married, but you just did it at the age of 49. So my question is, how was your love life until you met your wife?
Have you been drinking? How was my love life? Like anybody else, I mean, you have some girlfriends, 2-3 years. Happy. I would like to think I'm in contact. I like to stay in contact with girlfriends and friends. I think it's a shame I'm not in friends with them. But, I met my wife relatively late, I suppose. But fine. What, do you think I'm going to go back to them?
No. My question basically is, was it difficult for you to have long relationships?
Perhaps, you know, I mean, man, I'm maybe afraid of commitment. That's a good... I can't say that anymore, can I? I'm only allowed... That's a good question 5 times. I don't think so. I think perhaps you choose lifestyle, perhaps you choose travelling, and I think I had a girlfriend before, went travelling around the world, and she said, oh, you buggered off and left me, you know. But I'm sorry if I hurt anybody for that, but it definitely wasn't a conscious decision. I'm sure there were some girlfriends or some people that I loved and they didn't love me, or I would have married them, and or vice versa, you know. Tricky one, this. Normal, I would guess. Some successes, some failures, some... Yeah. Don't know really what to answer that question.
Well, it's easy for you to decide to get married.
No. Okay, so I can see the two parts of the question have linkage. Yeah, this is actually something worth mentioning, I guess. If my wife was listening to this now, she would say, see? It was. It took some time. I had some doubts and things like this, whether, you know, Paul Weller's, my anger shouts, my own self-doubts. It did take some time to commit, and perhaps I regret that perhaps we don't have any children. If things had happened a bit earlier, that might have happened. We were living in different countries, we still are. I think that's you know, maybe, you know, I can tell people how to have a long distance relationship. I can't tell anybody anything. I could advise people how to have a long distance relationship.
It's coming next, so just focus on
But I think if you've been doing your research, I think I can understand where this question is going. I hope this is not on my blog. It took some time, but my wife, she's pretty determined. She's quite an interesting person. She also has a PhD, social science, works in a hospital, doesn't take any nonsense. I can't swear. I was going to use another word. And she said to me, and I remember where I was, if my father's not alive to see me marry, I will never forgive you. And I thought, uh-oh. It was like a cartoon, you know, where you stop and, uh-oh. And I have to thank her for that, because I might have procrastinated. Yeah, let's see, Portugal, Sweden, la la. But then she changed my mind. I thought, okay, get your SH1T together and propose. In hindsight, a lot of people say, oh, don't marry, it's just a day. This I disagree with. Are we going to talk about marriage and the wedding?
Yeah.
Okay, then I will say, yeah, I mean, it's the greatest day of your life. I think somebody once said to me, you know, only your wedding and your funeral can you see that many people together. One of them's enjoyable and one of them's not. I'm not saying which is which. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not the marriage guidance counsellor. I do like self-help books, to be honest. Perhaps that's just being a nerd or being a man or being from Northern England, that we need to understand a little bit more the, you know, advice parts. But it stabilised the relationship, you know, put a ring on it, or put a ring on it. Is that what the song is? What's the Beyoncé song? Yeah,
if put a ring on it. You're going to put a ring on it.
Thank you. That's not in my playlist.
Sure not.
But, I mean, the marriage was great, seeing all your friends from all different places of the world, from Sweden, from the UK, from Canada.
More than that was, were you ready to get married?
I think so.
Did you propose?
I said I did. My wife said I didn't. It was on my grandmother's 90th birthday, and I remember my cousin going, oh. But my wife said not, so maybe I owe her a proposal.
I'm sorry, but I think your birthday of your grandmother was in May, and your marriage was already scheduled for September. So you already had the wedding rings. Not.
Yeah.
I don't think about that like a proposal, to be honest.
Yeah,
I don't know your wife, but I would say that it's too late for a proposal.
Fair enough. I'm sure perhaps I maybe need to revisit that. Yeah.
Do you think all the ingredients were there for marriage?
I do.
Or you think it was just procrastinating because you didn't believe that the relationship was good enough?
I wonder what my wife would think if she was listening to this. No, I think the ingredients are in place. Maybe I have to get a bit of a self-threshold, you know. Maybe I've put it off for too long. Maybe I've just become Scooby-Doo. I think we used to use the term Scooby-Doo, like a synonym for being scared. Oh, come on, don't be Scooby-Doo. I think we did. I have to ask about that. But once committed, it was a fantastic event. It was very tiring, especially learning to dance and things like this. And to see so many people in the same place, almost like the PhD events, is why are all these people from different phases of my life? You know, whether it be from the UK, whether it be from student days, whether it be from travelling days, whether it be from current days, whether it be from my wife's family. It was a joyous. I wish we could slow it all down and relive it all. It was very joyous. It was very tiring. Is that what the question, or am I talking about something else?
The question was not really that.
Oh, sorry.
Because we're going to your wife particularly, but was from understanding if actually you procrastinate because you think the relationship was not good enough, or just because you are a procrastinator.
Like buying a large screen TV. Am I a procrastinator? Perhaps. I would say it's topic sensitive. I think sometimes I'm pretty direct. In some things, perhaps be a little bit more slow. I mean, you can get to 58, 59 and say, you haven't done anything. You can get to 58, 59 and say, you've done a lot. You know, it's a tricky one. That I think I saw a marked change in my wife when we're going to get married and choosing the dress and inviting the people. And my wife, she's an amazing organizer. Gifts, present, and she went into overdrive. I did nothing, and I got accused of doing nothing, and that's quite fair. I think even the day before I got married, my grandmother said I have to get some new shoes. Embarrassing. But that was not through lack of effort. I just let it roll on. It was not, yeah.
You were happy enough?
Yeah, I think it was one of the best days of my life.
Before we decided to get married in the relationship?
Yeah, I think it went up and down. I mean, distance relationships, a little bit difference in culture, but I don't know, you have to kind of ask my wife. You know, one person might say one thing and one person might say another. I think it was... I wish it had not taken 8 years, to be honest. But at least if you know if you marry the right person after 8 years, you've got no excuse.
Okay, so let's listen to our seventh song. Do you want to talk about it?
Oh, this is the hard part of the listen. Well, there's been a few melancholic songs, but I very much like this group. I think they're a very much underrated group. They're called the Sundays. And I think my grandmother passed away on a Sunday, I think. We used to have phone calls. We used to have phone calls on a Sunday, you know. I think the group is a beautiful group. It's the Sundays, and this song is called Cry.
Assuming that is very important to you.
Yeah, essential. When we went to see, unfortunately, she passed away 2 weeks before we were going to visit, me and my wife, we made a regular event of going to Toronto, and to see her, whether it's in her home, which I remember extremely well, and also in a care home. And my wife made me go, enjoyed going. She loved her, I loved her. We all loved each other. It was fantastic. So that was a little bit unfortunate. My wife said, come on, we have to go there quickly, you know. And my grandmother was pretty well. We had a phone call the week before on Sunday. What a crazy coincidence with the name of the group. And then I think on Monday or Tuesday, yeah, she'd already gone. So that was, I think, 1 or 2 days before my wife's birthday. So we had the 45th birthday. I remember everybody coming up to me and going, Forza, you know, squeezing me and stuff. But that song, I know my wife lost her cousin. They have a song which is very dear to them, and that song is very dear to me. It's very difficult to hear it, but she sang it, and you know, you gave me so much, and now it's all the earth. Yeah, tough. Anyway, so we had a little postcard and we had a few lyrics printed on the back. Yeah, well, anyway, you can hear it makes me cry.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to say one other thing is all the other songs have been for me, and the last two songs are for other people.
Let's try to change a little bit for a different atmosphere here.
Please, I drank half a beer in that song. Sorry, in that first 30 seconds. Yeah.
So you pick a wife from another country again, right?
What do you mean again?
You've been traveling around, father Italian, mother Indian, Now you have a Portuguese wife, so you really love to travel, right? Can you tell us about how you met?
I think some people should listen to the sister podcast of what my wife says, because she always tells me, she always tells a different story. I would say, suggest you listen to both and choose which side you're on, you know. Like the traitors, you choose a side. Yeah, I've told this story quite a lot of times. My wife's told the story a lot of times, but they're not the same story.
Something's wrong there.
Perhaps I should have chosen the song Here's Where the Story Ends by the Sundays, which I was listening today, funny enough. Yeah, I mean, we were waiting in Stockholm. I was in Stockholm going travelling for work. My wife and my best friend were also in Stockholm, going home from visiting Stockholm. I mean, sometimes I'm sociable, chit-chatty, sometimes not. And we sat there, opened the laptop, stopped working. Of course, laptops are not like now. You know, you always had to charge them. You're always running for a charger, you know. Laptop died. I was supposed to give a presentation. Typical me, wasn't finished. No laptop. And then I heard bling, bling. The flight to Lisbon is 4 hours delayed. I said, oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry for blaspheming. No laptop, 4 hours delayed. And in most airports, there are interesting terminals and less interesting terminals. This is one of the most boring terminals in Stockholm, Arlanda. For people who know Stockholm, Arlanda, it's Terminal 2. There's nothing there. Probably that's why they put the Portuguese there. And the British and the Dutch. No, I'm joking. But basically, it's a very small terminal. There's no shops. There's nothing. I think it's like one coffee shop or one bookshop. So I thought to myself, oh, well, 4 hours delayed, and I'll talk to these two girls. Speaking like this. And somebody said to me the night before, you mentioned being late and getting married quite late, an Iranian expression is, if you want to catch a fish, you've got to stir the water. Someone told me this. I thought, bloody hell, I've been there, you know, smooth talking, buying drinks, and this is not working. So why don't I try this approach? You know, you put your hands in the water, and as soon as the fish sees your hands, it swims away. So you create a big mess in the water, and then you pick out the fish. And so this person, oh, I think you can imply something from the alcohol being poured into the glass. So I thought, okay, rather than be super smooth, I've never been super smooth, I will cause some mischief. And so 4 hours delayed, I'm assuming these two girls for Portugal, and I turned around to a Portuguese girl and just said, 4 hours delay, it's your fault. Wow. Can you imagine the reaction? If anybody knows anybody in Southern Europe, that's not going to go down well. But I didn't mean it nastily. I said it kind of to stir the water, you know, to cause some mischief. Of course, I don't think it went down particularly well. I think at that time, nobody thought they were going to get married. It was more like going to be a funeral. I said later, there's only two chances when you can see people. It's a funeral or a death. And I think I was closer to a funeral at that point. Especially my wife. I think she was going to throttle me. How do you know this? We're in Sweden. It's nothing to do with our planes. And la, 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 la. Sweden thinks they're perfect. They're arrogant. And I said, calm down, because I'm not even Swedish. And I thought, it's a good time to back off now, as my wife was raging like a bull. I said, girls, come back. I speak Swedish. I've been here 20 years. I'll go and ask the guys. And then they go and ask me. And I asked him, he said, yeah, basically the plane's broken. I said, I knew it. Get a little wink to the guy, you know, and like, come back. And then, of course, I went back and I completely lied. I said, no, it's the Swedish fault. They were so happy. My wife going, see, and she still says that now. See, it's your fault. I lied. I was like, I dodged a bullet there. I knew the plane was broken. Swedes don't do that stuff, and the planes, you know. Subsequently, oddly enough, with this airline, I've lost lots of bags, so perhaps it was true, but no, I lied. And they were so happy, don't accuse us, we're in your stupid country, we paid 30 euros for a piece of salmon, it's only two, oh my goodness me. And I've flown a lot of times, you mentioned travelling, and been to lots of places, I've never sat in business class, ever, or even close to the front. And that time, I actually got in the business class. I don't know why they put me there. Perhaps Portuguese are nice, right? You know, they put me in business class. And I looked back, and I wanted to say to the girls, ah, ha, ha, ha. And I saw them next to this big fat guy, and one in them squashed against the window. and then one squashed in the middle seat. And I said, come on, girls, come to the front, blah, 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 come with me. And they're thinking, I don't want to talk to that. Bleep, 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 bleep. But the friend persuaded her, come on, let's go, I think. I don't know, you have to ask my wife, but this is my recollection. Perhaps I'm seeing this through wrong, you know, Portuguese coloured glasses. And we got there and we started drinking, chat-chat, chit-chatting. We were not flirting, we were just chit-chatting. And my wife was drinking, told me about the ex-boyfriend. I said, oh, okay, okay, I'm sorry about that. Who gives a shit? Oh, sorry, I shouldn't swear on air. And yeah, we had little drinks. And then something very strange happened. I don't know what made me do it. So we arrived in Lisbon and we continued chatting. They were very nice. They continued chatting to me. And they were flying to Porto, I think, and I was going to Coimbra, academic town, or things like this, and I missed my train, or there was no flight, I must have been taking the train. So we were chatting, I think I spent the time when we arrived in Lisbon chatting to them, and they said, we have to go. It was nice talking to you, but hey, do. Oh, fair enough. And I had a baggage tag, either it had been checked on or it was on, I can't remember really why. And I just took it off. I don't remember thinking it was like the stage thing, I don't remember planning it, I didn't read it anywhere, I don't know what happened. And I just tore it off and gave it to my wife, or then the Portuguese girl then, of course, and said, we're going to get married within 10 years. I mean, not me, I mean, I should have said 10 weeks, right? I shouldn't have said, I knew it would take a long time because I'm procrastinator or Scooby-Doo. I don't know where it is somewhere, but I have to ask my wife if it's there. But yeah, that was kind of like, I wasn't trying to trick her or make me like her or anything like that. It's just some weird thing. You just, I don't know why you do that kind of stuff, you know? And so I gave it to her, and well, maybe you asked me earlier about if there's anything that sped up there. Perhaps it was the 10-year deadline of the baggage ticket and not the father. No, I'm joking. It was definitely having the father be there to take his beautiful daughter down the aisle. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of them we went to visit afterwards, but I think that's the kind of important points. So I've got a little bit of advice for people listening is don't talk to strangers, especially when you're traveling.
Actually, very interesting. That was going to be my second question to you. In your blog, it says married to Portuguese. Don't. Can you explain that then?
No, it's just a little bit of a joke. No, they're fine. The UK and Portugal have a good relationship. I think lots of people come to the Algarve. It was supposed to be minimalist humour, you know, just one way. No, I think the countries have quite good relationships. I think they're... take that with a pinch of salt. Mm-hmm. And probably a pinch of salt in a very large codfish.
But how you consider your relationship after that?
Yeah, good question. I would say I've sort of bent my wife more into English culture than I've gone into Portuguese culture. We watch quite a lot of UK television. She likes quite a lot of UK music. She speaks English very well. I think I do the important things, you know, be with the family, Christmas, you know, birthdays. In fact, this week has been the mother-in-law's 80th. So we're sitting here in Porto recording this. It's a good relationship. I think there's a lot of commonalities, music, humour, travel, similar food. So, yeah, I can't say anything more. That's probably true of any relationship, I would say.
I always have a long-distance relationship.
It's not easy and easy at the same time. I would say if you only focus on the negatives, you will almost inevitably not make it. You know, you're not together and things, perhaps physical contacts when you're close. If you take the best of them, you know, you travel, you meet every time you meet. It's like a honeymoon, maybe splash out a little bit. Very nice to see each other. You can always think about moving to each other's respective countries. Maybe in hindsight, it was not a good decision. I mean, I can't say it's ideal, but I think we've made the best of it. If, you know, perhaps with modern telecommunications, maybe even things that I've been working on, I can't say it's easy, but we've made it work. I would like to say that you'll have to ask my wife. But I believe if you focus on the good things, that every time you meet, you be a nice hotel and go to places. You can choose a lot of nice places between Porto and Stockholm, which we do. So, I mean, I'm not going to give advice to any people having a long-distance relationship here. But you meet every month, speak every day, send emojis every morning. Yeah, I think for us it's worked, but you'd have to ask my wife. It's not perfect. I mean, obviously you're not together. When you're together, it's very special. Me, my wife, the cat, and some food trays in front of some iPlayer. That's probably been the best thing for a marriage. No, it's comfort zone, right? I mean, which families don't have that?
I know you don't have kids. Why not?
Oh, that's a really tough one. Maybe a little bit of age, maybe a little bit of distance, maybe being a little bit selfish. Yeah, that's a hard one. I can't point. There was never a conscious decision not to have any. But maybe it should still happen. I guess you can still get pregnant at 59. Well, that would be weird for me to get pregnant, but I don't know. I'm not dodging the question, perhaps.
Do you ever think about adopting?
Yeah, that would be quite nice, to pass on all the knowledge, to have a legacy, to bring up somebody. If we've got a cat, does that count?
I don't know.
Probably yes, it'd be a good idea. Yeah. I don't know. I'm struggling with that one. I'm not saying yes or no. I don't know really.
I never thought about it.
Fleetingly, but not constantly. Yeah.
What are your plans for the future?
That's interesting. I'm 6 years away from retirement. Probably come and have a beautiful life in Portugal. Maybe before, who knows? It's maybe too many years apart. Perhaps it's something you regret. Think about your pension. Go and play golf in the Algarve. I don't know if I'm on it. I think I'll probably continue working. I'm a workaholic, but I have lots of ideas, lots of stupid ideas of, you know, which involve IT. I think most of the world now has IT somewhere. Be with my wife, cat, TV, yeah. Do a bit of work, maybe become a millionaire, I don't know. Don't know, not very visionary in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
Let my wife decide.
What she wants?
Don't know.
Okay, let's listen to your last song.
Okay.
Can you talk about it?
Yeah, I can. It's The Pet Shop Boys, Being Boring. I think it's a beautiful song. Me and my wife went to see Lloyd Cole. He said it's the best song ever. It's a very difficult song to cover. I think the Pet Shop Boys are lyrical, musical geniuses. So not Paul at this time. I just think, you know, the lyrics, some are here and some are missing, you know, about songs. I think it's a beautiful song. I think me and my wife were never boring. In our wedding, we had Being Boring, and then my wife took Never and put it in front of it, so it's never being boring, because we're not boring. My wife is 45, I'm 59, I don't think we're boring. It's just a beautiful song.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you would like to say?
Maybe something about that song. If you could describe that song in a material, it would be silk. The first line, I came across a cache of old photos. You might have noticed I like lyrics, and I think a lot about the lyrics. I've spent the last 6 months scanning pictures, physical photos. It's a shame that they're in. It's lovely, they're physical, but if you want to share them. So I've scanned at least non-stop photos. I mean, if you've been scanning photos and looking back in them and sticking them and sharing them and sending them, people have thanked me for that. I wish everyone would do that, but that's their prerogative. Thinking back, you never time would come to an end, you know. Some are here and some are missing this. That song. That song is a beautiful song. I think it's evocative. I think it's clever. I think it's beautifully written. I think it's changed over time. I think first time we had tickets for Pet Shop Boys, it was something different. I think it's a song written originally about HIV and AIDS. And then unfortunately we lost a couple of very close people to us during the pandemic. And when we finally went to see the Pet Shop Boys, he said this, you know, this song has taken a completely different meaning post-COVID. So I just want to say about that song. I think it's a marvel. I hope people agree. Is there anything else I would like to say? Oh, yeah, loads of stuff, but I don't think people want to listen to me anymore.
Please, of course.
No.
You are the important one in the show. Of course, yes.
I think people are looking forward to the next episode of Desert Island Discs, and I feel I've said enough.
Anything particular you think that we didn't cover from your life?
No, I think that was extremely well researched. I didn't know that much was available on my blog. I think it covered the important parts, you know. Be good to people, we didn't talk about it, be nice to animals. Me and my wife, big animal lover, it doesn't matter, cats, dogs, Portuguese. No, I'm joking. No, it's very well researched.
So, Ian Marsh, I'm going to send you now to the little island. How do you think you'll cope?
Oof. I'm an only child. I do like to be on my own. And I do like to be sociable. I think I'm really going to miss people, if I'm honest. I'll try to talk to the coconuts or the fish or the crabs, I don't know. I like the idea of a bit of solitude and quiet, but I think I'll miss people, yeah.
I will give you a book to take with you, the Bible, Shakespeare, and another book of your choice. What would you like?
Full set of my wife's photo albums.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to remember the people and stuff. They're beautifully made, they're nice memories. If I may, I don't know. They are books.
Books.
Thank you.
You can also have a luxury item to make life more pleasurable. What would it be?
Guitar. I think I'll take a guitar and finally learn to play that stupid thing.
Finally, which one of the tracks of the 8 would you keep?
Given I'm on a desert island and I don't want to be bored, I'll take the Pet Shop Boys.
Thank you so much. Did you enjoy to be in the show?
I did. I have to be honest, I was pretty nervous at the beginning. I think it was very difficult to choose the songs, but you guided me through it and I enjoyed it very much so. Thank you.
Thank you.